You might find the odd financial advisor that would walk in this way, but I know many people who have never gotten advice this way, which is simply run your home and your dough like a biblical boss.
Steven, I was up quite late last night because
I know why. Can I guess?
Yeah.
Because Texas Tech was making it happen?
Man, they were. And I got to confess, I had sort of gotten frustrated because they were down by like 20 points for most of the game. And I had said, it doesn't help the world for me to be angry at this television. So I'm just going to say, what a good season. Great bunch of guys. See you next year. And I was brushing my teeth and I ran downstairs, woke my oldest daughter up and said, honey, they've got it to within three.
Oh, that's
one minute left.
That's fun.
And then those Red Raiders pulled it off. And so
yes,
they're going to the Elite Eight, which is pretty fun.
It's a little embarrassing that you talk about that you're up into the wee hours because I'm 2 hours later than you. And my wife was well gone. And as she was tucking herself into nightland, she said something like, it's a 12-point game. She's very dialed into March Madness. She's like, the Razorbacks look very good. It's a 12-point game. I said, don't you count out Texas Tech. They're not done. And sure enough, right at the bitter end, I'd love to see, you know how you can see the percentages of who's going to win? It had to look just like this right at the end. I mean, it just had to go like, whoop.
It's pretty fun. Yeah, they called it a less than 1% chance.
Oh, that's
like
cool.
The entire second half.
Moving on. What are we talking about today? I tell the people how this topic of having these nine ideas that your ding-dong financial advisor would never tell you. How did you come up with this?
Somebody else made this podcast, but they don't have a very big audience. And I said, we could rip it off and pass it off as our own.
Smart.
No, that's not what happened. But I was on Twitter and somebody posted, another financial planner posted his like hot takes that you wouldn't expect a financial advisor to say because they conflict with kind of the Money Magazine wisdom or whatever. And I said, I have my own hot takes. And they're not the same as this guy's, but I bet we could share them to our audience, and that might be valuable to the listener. So what we're going to cover today is nine opinions that you or I have, or maybe both of us, we might agree, that are controversial in that they're not what you might expect from a financial advisor to tell you. And I'm kind of looking forward to it because you might know I like controversial opinions. I'm at my best when I'm trying to disprove the masses.
Well, to get us into your first shocking truth.
Okay. We've done a whole episode on this. Maybe we'll link it in the show notes. But credit cards. Have you heard Dave Ramsey talk about credit cards, Steven? He warns you off of those suckers.
You know what? Not only do I know that he says that, I used to work at a church. And the finance guy at the church was very big into, well, we need to get all our people through the Dave Ramsey because most Americans are in financial straits. And so he had on his wall a big set of mosaic that somebody made him out of destroyed credit cards. And it was, you know, some holy noble thing. Anyways, yes,
well,
that's a big deal.
I'm here to say today,
say it.
Credit cards are actually good for you.
Ooh.
And so, you know, here I tried to kind of, as we are wont to do here at the Abraham's Wallet podcast, I tried to see, do my hot opinions line up with the scriptures at all?
Oh.
And Proverbs 21:5 is a verse that we have been partial to at Abraham's Wallet. It says, the plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance, but everyone who is hasty comes only to poverty. And my headline is not just credit cards are good for you. It's that credit cards in and of themselves are not evil. Hasty and undisciplined use of credit cards is. But the principle is planning. So when you're intentional, you can use tools like a credit card wisely, and they actually can have all sorts of positive benefits. So I encourage our clients when we're doing financial planning, unless they are, it's kind of like the Baptists with alcohol. I bet your boy was also not a big fan of strong drink with his credit card mural, given your Baptist upbringing. But I think what has happened, I grew up in a Baptist church where alcohol was pretty much like, this is a bad thing. And everybody kind of did it, but they didn't talk about it. Or they talked about it being bad, but then they did it when they were alone. With credit cards, I think a lot of, especially Christians, say credit cards equal debt, and that's evil. And you've taken something that can be a good thing and a part of life that is enhancing. In the case of credit cards, that looks like, hey, Steven just got a $500 REI gift card because he signed up for their credit card and they paid him just to use it a little bit for things he was going to buy anyways. Mark got to sit in first class last time he traveled on Delta because he's been using the Delta card. But I would say if you're somebody who has fallen into the trap of credit cards, which is, again, going back to Proverbs 21:5, hasty purchasing of things that you haven't actually mapped out, planned for, and been able to afford, then credit cards, not themselves, but the tool, have allowed you to do things that are truly dumb, evil, etc. But the credit card itself still gave you rewards even when you made those dumb choices. So as long as you're not going to use the tool to make dumb decisions, you can actually come out with all sorts of rewards. And if you're smarter than the average American, which is not that hard to do if you're a listener to this podcast.
True.
I'm going to say, why not get paid when you buy groceries? Why not get some cash back or some free gasoline or travel?
Yeah. It's like slamming yourself in the knee with a hammer and then declaring that hammers are dangerous. It's your self-control that's the problem. I actually thought of this week because we're doing some finagling with credit cards. We closed down a couple and I've just gotten a couple of new ones. And I don't know if you've seen in my closet, I have this filing cabinet system of credit cards. I probably have 15 credit cards that are open right now. And I thought, I wonder if our people, maybe this is just something to do on I've thought this would be an interesting episode to like walk through all of my credit cards. Why do I have each one of them? What the credit line is, how much credit I walk around with in my pocket every day. It's got to be hundreds of thousands of dollars that I could spend if I was an idiot. But the whole magic of it is not spending that money and being shrewd about it. Anyhow.
So yeah. And even if, I don't know if you followed it, with the new administration, they've talked about getting rid of credit card interest above a certain point. And at first I was like, oh, that'd be great. And somebody told me, I read a study that showed how much that would actually limit capital for lower income, lower credit score people. There are people who use credit cards, even with their crazy high interest rates, to make purchases for their businesses and they need them and things like that. But even if all the rewards didn't exist that we have talked about on the show before, there's benefits to credit cards. Like last time I rented a car with my American Express card, they covered all the insurance. And that's not true of if I had used a debit card to rent the car. There's fraud protection. I've been alerted to fraud with my credit card. There's lots of benefits to using them. So if you're somebody who's on top of your budget and spending, I don't see really any reason why you wouldn't use a credit card.
All right. Here's another money truth for you that I believe. Losing some money is good and even desirable. There, I said it. The plan is not, and our goal is not, that every single thing that we do is going to turn up roses. Everything you invest in is going to be a winner. Every outlay of cash for every business startup, it's all going to win. That's probably what you think in your mind when you go, well, we're going to do this investment. I hope it works. Well, of course, we're all trying to be wise and shrewd and hope that it works. But I'm here to tell you, in the name of God, that His diet for your life will include suffering and it'll include failure probably in all five capitals. So I'm telling you this because if you've tasted a little failure, as we have, You can get down on yourself and feel like a loser, or I can't take another chance again, and fear takes over because you've been through some financial trauma or whatever. I'm just telling you that not only is it acceptable, that it's part of God's plan. Proverbs 24:16, for the righteous falls seven times and rises again, but the wicked stumble in times of calamity. Obviously, there's a truth being taught there, which is if you can learn to go through trouble, if a believer has faith in the midst of trouble, God's going to be good to me. The future's going to be good. We rise again out of calamity as opposed to just like falling on our face in despair. And I've got to throw this out. There's so many verses like this in the Bible, but you've heard James chapter 1. Consider it pure joy, brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance and it ends up in maturity. So having your faith tested, whether it's financially, intellectually, physically, relationally, or spiritually, don't freak out when trouble comes. Matter of fact, if you can be somebody who watches over that kind of trouble happening for your children, you'll set them up for great success as you make disciples in them and they face failure, whether it's financial failure or failure in a relationship, whatever. You look them in the eye, you make a fist and you say, we can go past this. God is going to be good no matter what. And we're going to be here for you and we're going to keep going. It's part of God's fertilizer for the soul. And we've got to stop the American thing that goes, oh, I'm a loser. Everything doesn't work. And go, no, there's hope. This is actually part of God's plan.
Yeah, that's good. We've been reading Ecclesiastes in our pre-dinner scripture time as a family. We just got to chapter 11, which is one of your favorite verses that says, cast your bread upon the waters. And the idea is spread things out because the design of the world is that not every single investment you make is going to be a banger. You're going to have wins and losses. We've talked about this a bunch. The best venture capitalists in the world hope to have 1 out of 10 of their investments be a home run. They usually say 1 out of 10 will be a home run. Another 1 or 2 out of 10 will maybe give us our money back, and the rest will be a total loss, and they still make money hand over fist.
Right.
So losing money, you know, if you only are willing to do things that can't lose,
yes,
you will be poor.
That's right.
Okay, here's one. I'm going to combine a couple, but my headline is, cars are not a waste of money. Fancy cars are not a waste of money. And kind of more broadly, you've heard it said that buying experiences, that's where you should spend your money. That's the secret to fulfillment with spending is don't spend on things, spend on experiences. And I'm here to say sometimes it's actually not just okay, but even good and fulfilling to spend on stuff.
All right, let's hear it.
How does that hit you?
I'm interested. I'm interested in you making this case.
Well, I started by thinking about cars because I've always been taught, you know, the second you drive it off the lot, it's worth 25% less and it's a depreciating asset. You should just, I guess by this logic, we should all drive the minimum functional vehicle that gets us from point A to point B. We're kind of starting to get close to car buying time. I talked about this a while back. We thought we were going to buy one a year or two ago and didn't. But we're gonna pass along the current family car to my daughter when she turns 16, and we're going to buy something else. It's why I'm a little bit uneasy about these tariffs, Stephen. They are they're having an effect on the car market. But
yeah,
I think that one thing my wife and I looked back and went, we bought a nice new car for her 11 years ago. We have lost exactly 0 days because we bought a very reliable car and spent money to maintain it. 0 days in that 11 years has she been at the auto shop getting it put back into service. zero wow. times, except if a kid left a door open and it had to be jumped because the battery was dead.
Yeah.
Zero times has she turned the key and it didn't fire up.
Wow.
So this is not an ad for Toyota, but I will say Toyota is the way to go. But even without just that kind of reliable, dependable asset component of it, some people just really get a thrill out of driving a cool car. And we don't think at Abraham's Wallet that all of your money has to only be deployed into productive endeavors. Some of your money, we've talked about this with luxury spending, some of your money, it's okay to ask the Lord and say, would it be okay if I spent some of this money on something that I just think would be enjoyable and delightful? And I just want to tell people that's not wrong. And of course, yes, there's a ditch on both sides of this road. And we can't, honestly, we can't tell you exactly foolproof parameters for what that is.
That's right.
You know, I was into watches for a while, and I owned some watches that somebody might go, that's an absurd waste of money. Could I look a Elon Musk in the eye if he bought a $150,000 watch and say, that's evil? I don't think I could.
Right.
If you're hoping we'll tell you exactly what purchases of stuff you're allowed to make, we're not going to. James, going back to James 1, in verse 17, it says, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights. I think this is where we say, you know, there's a lot of things that can be distorted and done evil with, but the fundamental nature of the world that the Lord has created is that there's a lot of good gifts to be enjoyed. And some of the gifts out there, the things in the world, it's okay for us to enjoy them. And we just, the hard work that we have to do is then ask the Lord, which ones of these would it be wise and shrewd of me to spend some of the money you've left me in charge of to enjoy? Going back to kind of the idea of experiences or possessions, the right possessions can sometimes create a lifetime of experiences. You know, if you buy a vehicle that's really fun, you actually get to enjoy that. Now, we've talked about the diminishing returns there. I promise you, if you buy a Ferrari, it's still going to generate the same brainwaves that a Honda Civic does. If you've made that your daily driver, eventually you're just going to get in and go, this is my car. So bad news there. Maybe rent your exotic cars instead of buying them. But, you know, things like I just bought a guitar 6 months ago, and we've talked about that. It kind of motivates me when it's sitting in the corner of my office to sit down and play and learn. I'm like, I'm still every day almost going, this was a great purchase. And I've screwed it up too and been like, wow, this was a waste of money. I didn't want whatever I bought was junk and I shouldn't have done it. So I don't know. Maybe this is the same principle you just covered. Sometimes you hit it and sometimes you whiff when you try to do this. But as a rule, it's okay to buy stuff.
Great. Good word. We always got to keep, well, because we are constantly ringing the bell of financial stewardship and being responsible, it's always good to touch on occasionally, there can be legalism that gets into that, where every dollar's got
of
to
course.
Be the most efficient way possible. And then you get into the same thing where if something that you're trying fails, well, then you feel immoral. Well, I didn't, it's not the most efficient. The Lord knows it's not the most efficient thing. I'm taking my wife out to dinner tonight. Here we are. It's April. And I'm making up for the Valentine's meal that we didn't get to do. So that's happening tonight. And it won't be the most efficient use of dollars that I've ever had. I can assure you of that, because that's not all that life is about. And I think of the verse in Timothy where Paul says, everything is to be enjoyed if it's received with thanksgiving. You know, if you can honestly yeah. say before God, I'm grateful to you for this. This is because of your kindness. Then it's okay. I was thinking while you were talking, we have some friends who were principal owners of a company that did very well. And when it was retirement time, they got a, golden parachute of over $10 million for it. Now, I also know that these people are generous. I know they gave away more than $1 million of that 10. Okay, now you tell me, what are they allowed to do with that money? Can they go on a $50,000 cruise in a week where they just burn through $50,000 on an amazing vacation? Is that immoral for them? I'd say watch out for anybody that's going to make judgments over them and start making accusations about what they can and can't do. They've got the money, and it's between them and God how they use it. So yeah, we got to be graceful to others and to ourselves about making every single cent count. So that's our, as you said, there's ditches.
Yep.
All right.
Hit us with number four.
Yeah. Here it is. This is just something I always think of. I hear young people talking about not having the money to get married or not having the money to have children. And we've talked about this before. And I think that the wise conservative financial advisor idea, what are you saying?
I'm miming the action of grabbing them by the collar and slapping them upside the head.
Right. So here's what I just want to say that your run-of-the-mill financial advisor won't say. Wife and kids are assets. They're not liabilities. Proverbs 31:10. Ever heard of this, Jim? An excellent wife who can find, she is worth far more than precious jewels and rubies. Amen to that. We know that there are financial, just look at the studies. There's financial benefits of being married. You'll earn more. You'll save more. You'll have a better quality of life if you attach yourself to a woman and feel the godly responsibility of, okay, this is real. I'm not in playland anymore. I can't do video games all day. I got to have a life here. Let's go. And not to mention the fact that she in herself is worth more than rubies. Why wouldn't you want to connect your life to that? Secondly, a favorite verse around here, Proverbs 1:27 says, children are a heritage or a treasure from the Lord. Offspring are a reward from him. So children are treasure. They're treasure in the short term because of the love and there's something they do cement in a young couple. They bind them together. We know that we have a mission here that's going to last for 50 years, which is our mission is this child now. The child also produces, if you work your family, not like an American, but more like a Bible-believing Hebrew, then you build generational wealth with that child. So the more children that you have, the more wealth you have. If you're thinking in short term, we have to buy a crib. Don't do that. Don't think we might have to buy a banana for our newborn. We wouldn't have had to buy that banana otherwise. You're really thinking like a poor person who's stuck in the spirit of poverty. That's not the way that it works. Children are a treasure. Receive them that way. Receive marriage that way. It's wealth.
Amen. I'm gonna circle back on that on my last one.
Okay. But
then my next one is not going to be a shocker to our audience because we've talked about it over and over, but it is really controversial if I rolled this out at a financial planning conference. And it would be, I think, not all of your giving dollars should be tax deductible.
Whoa.
So we know, based on the statistics, that most Americans basically give zero. Like it's rounds to zero what most people give in terms of generosity. That's true amongst professing Christians, and it's true amongst just secular whoever's in America. But when they do think about giving, they typically think about donations to 501c3s, such as Abraham's Wallet, 501c3 nonprofit.
We love our donors. I'll just insert that one real quick.
Yeah. And so people think, well, if I'm going to give, I'll choose a 501c3 nonprofit because that is what the government has told me giving is. And I am here to tell you that the most meaningful generosity that I typically see from families won't show up on your tax return. Giving to people directly, you know, Matthew 6, Jesus says, when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. We could even extrapolate that out and say, you know, should I be alerting the U.S. government about all of my giving behaviors? Maybe not. But if somebody doesn't have, they've never really experienced joy with giving, a lot of times I go, that's because most all of their giving has probably been some auto draft thing they signed up for at church that says, well, this much comes out of my account each month or week or whatever. And sometimes the medicine for that is go to Chipotle and do the Stephen Manual and go up to the register and say, everyone in front of me until I get there, put them on my bill. And
so
just
simple.
Start to experience the joy of generosity. That you might buy burritos for five dudes who are all way wealthier than you.
Yeah.
It's not really about, I've got to find the specific neediest person even. It's just starting to flex the muscle. And I could talk about this for an hour, but the point is, you know, if you just want a practical tip, put something in your budget for giving away money that is no strings attached. You can call it cash. It doesn't have to be cash, but giving to just when the spirit moves. And if you have never done this and you want to start with $20 a month, that's fine with me. Just start to do it. Let your kids participate in it if you have kids and see what happens. I think this will be really healthy for your family.
That's great. Love it. I'm going to move right on. You might find the odd financial advisor that would walk in this way if they're like a trust kind of a person. But I know many people who have never gotten advice this way, which is simply plant trees whose shade you'll never enjoy. So do things with your money that will bring zero benefit to you personally. And that's certainly a follow-up on giving. It's how God wants us to be wired. But the first giving that you're supposed to do in your life is to your own family. So we love Proverbs 13:22. A good person leaves an inheritance for their children's children. That verse is on my living room wall. A godly person will be thinking about their children's children. Will I ever experience the benefit of these dollars? No, except for the satisfaction that I'm giving money to my children's children. And I know that it's going to grow and grow and grow between now and then. There's another verse I love, Deuteronomy 6. The words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk about them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. The idea is that passing something down to the next generation is a vital lifelong responsibility. We believe that happens in five capitals. If it's true of faith that I'm supposed to pass down to them, then I'm supposed to pass down money as well. Last one, this one puts a point on it so well. Paul says this in 2 Corinthians 12:14. He says, what I want is not your possessions, but you. After all, children should not have to save up for their parents, but parents for their children. There is something that is nobly humanitarian about giving money to your future generations that, scripturally speaking, is more noble and more holy than handing it out to strangers. This is why you and I can't understand the Warren Buffett idea, which is to keep most of his wealth away from his own children. But, well, and then he answers because he hasn't trained his children to handle that wealth. But the idea scripturally is I'm going to push this money down the road. I'm never going to touch it. That, you know, we've all heard of the stories of grandpa planting the tree and saying the shade of this tree I will never enjoy, because he's thinking long term about the generations. That's how we're supposed to think about our money.
Yeah. And I'll just tell you, there's this progression that I see with people when they think about multi-generational money. But I think it starts with the typical American vision, which is children are, like you said, they're not an asset. They're a cost center. My responsibility is to fund their basic, you know, needs, food and shelter, until they turn 18. And then I get to just blow the rest of my money on me. And if there's some left over, I'm gonna pat myself on the back if I'm still capable of doing so on my deathbed and think I left them a little bit of money. That's like starting point for most Americans. And then they start going, well, what if I did some giving to my generations, but it's still, I'm going to give to things that I can see and experience. I hear clients all the time tell me, I want to give with a warm hand, not a cold one. Meaning I don't want all my money to be passed in as an inheritance. I'd like to see them using it. And that's great. And I like it because it's starting to move in the right direction, but it's also still sort of consumption. It's like, it would give me some, I would be able to get some benefit out of my money because I can see them enjoying it. And they probably are even going to go, thank you so much, dad or grandpa. So it's still kind of self-centered. And the real, my hot take is if you don't do things with your money that you will never see any personal fruit or benefit from, but that you're planting seeds that are way the heck out in the future, then if you don't ever do stuff like that and you talk about multi-generational wealth and all that, you're mostly kind of a faker because, you know, you're really talking about multi-generational, but you're only doing things that you get to enjoy, even if that enjoyment is just like the praise and thanks of your next generation. So I'm all about, how can we think about our grandchildren's children who we have really no hope of meeting and doing things that will change their story?
That's great.
I like that one a lot, Steve. Okay, here's a quick one. Home ownership is not a great goal.
Oh.
You know, right now, owning a home is kind of equal to success in American culture. It's one of the definitions. It's the suburban dream. I bought myself a home and I'm going to pay it off. And in reality, renting your space can be the smarter and more flexible option depending on what you're up to in life. You know, Stephen, you've worked in the business of getting people loans, but every time you buy or sell a house, you shell out a chunk of money for financing costs. You shell out usually some money to an agent who helps you buy and sell. There's moving expenses. So if you're not going to stay put for a while, or if you're not sure if you're going to stay put for a while, buying a home because you think that's the financially smart thing to do can actually lose you a ton of money over renting. Similarly, if you buy a house and your mortgage payment's going to be $3,000 a month and you have only $3,000 a month to spend on housing, I have bad news for you. When you buy a house, lots of things go wrong and break, and it's whatever your mortgage and tax and insurance payment is, that is not your whole cost.
Yep.
So you might do better in that case to rent a house for $3,000, because in that case, when the oven breaks, that's not your problem. Call the landlord. They'll put a new oven in. Hebrews 13:14 says, here we have no lasting city, but we seek the city that is to come. And the only reason I bring that verse up is because I do think some of us have this kind of idyllic vision that our piece of land is just super special. And there is truth to the fact that, like, God cares about land, and there's pieces of land he does care about. But I also think sometimes we get a little bit too precious about our little chunk of the earth that we are building a house on. And I think that sometimes, not always, I'm not anti buying a house, but sometimes the answer is, let's maintain ultimate flexibility and not tie ourselves into a particular house that could end up being a pretty big financial stress.
Good. All right, here's my last one. I grew up in a time where my boomer parents absolutely bootstrapped their lives, grew up poor and struggling. And when they were saving up money and living below their means, the kind of rule of thumb for the way that you talk to your children about money was you taught them to be conservative You never let on what your savings was. You made them all think that this is all we've got, kids. And as if whatever you've got saved, and that you never shared that with the kids. We had a neighbor down the street who famously lived like they were in utter poverty. And when I was like in college, my parents said, oh, no, they're millionaires. They're what? And I'd seen the way that the kids had dressed and how bad their shoes were in school. Oh yeah, this guy just socks it all away and never spends anything on his family. You can't believe how meager this guy was. That was the kind of concept, is that you tell the kids, we don't have much, we're gonna be conservative, because by doing this, you train them to live frugally. There's some value in that. Turn off the lights when you leave the room. Okay, I get all of that. Conservation, great. I'm deciding to go a different way. Ready for this one? Tell your kids they're rich. The idea is, I want the kids to know, we've talked about this before, our possibilities for spending are much greater than what they see. Number two, the wealth that we experience today is going to be greater for you. When you're a parent, you'll be managing more money than we have now, because we're going to continue to live below our means, and we're going to continue to grow wealth for our generations. You are going to be managing more wealth, and when you die, you'll be leaving behind more wealth than you inherit from us. So we want this, we want to be ingraining in their minds, we are the managers of growing fortune. Yes?
You only say that to your firstborn, who you're giving all the money to, though, right?
Of course, duh. Okay. So Proverbs 13:11 says, wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. Obviously, this principle to children is slow, steady work leads to lasting wealth. Get-rich schemes are not what we're about, but we're growing wealth. Proverbs 21:20 says, the wise store up choice food and olive oil, but fools gulp theirs down. Obviously, there's nothing left if you gulp down all the choice food. We are putting choice food aside, and we're going to be handing it to you, and you're going to be quite well healed. And if you wanted to blow, if you didn't have any self-control, which is my job to train in them before they leave my leadership, if they didn't have any self-control and they wanted to blow it all on Ferraris, they could do it. That's within their purview. And I want them to understand, I want them to get that responsibility. I have to throw in here that there are Bible stories that are supposed to be teaching us this principle. There's the prodigal son. He had riches, like a lot of money at his disposal. And we're supposed to know the story of the prodigal son and go, kids, that's not the way that we're supposed to live. That's not how we honor God. That's not how we honor our family. There is the story of Esau selling his birthright. We're talking about what he sold was, that was his ticket. His birthright was his golden ticket to multi-generational wealth that he would be stewarding. And he just kind of shrugged his shoulders going, I want to feel good today. And we need to be teaching our children, that's not what we do. I want you to want the responsibility of multi-generational wealth. I want you to feel the responsibility as our children. I'm sure it's true with you too, Mark. As our children walk around life, they have friends that don't have financial options. Our family does. We do have financial options. I attribute that to mostly my parents and the fact that what they've given us and what we've been able to build on, we have financial options. A lot of kids around them don't. They know that we have more money than we spend. They know that we could upgrade, you know, cars this month if we wanted to. And I want them to know that. I want them to know, here's what our family's bottom line is. Our net worth grows and grows and grows as we live below our means. And you're going to have that someday. And I want them to feel the restraint, the godly restraint that comes with knowing we're not spending everything that we have. We're managing wealth, and you too are managers of wealth in your tiny way now and someday in large ways.
Yeah, that's awesome. I totally agree. I can't really reveal it yet on the podcast, but you and I were both looking at one of our listeners has created just a rock and roll review of the year that he shared with his family. And we even asked if he would come on and talk about it here on the podcast. So that might be coming soon. But one of the things that they talked about is, here's how much we spent, here's how much our family's wealth grew. So they're kind of taking the goals summit that you and I have always done with our wives and expanding it out to being a multi-generational project. And I think it's great. So I won't even say their name until they've given us permission to do so, but I'm excited to hear more.
I can't wait. I'm hoping that they're going to say yes. I can't wait to share that with our audience.
Yeah. My last one is really along the same lines, but when we started this thing, I think Mr. Money Mustache was one of our big, we were like, wow, that guy is really writing about personal finance in a way that's fun. And we got pretty motivated, both you and I, Stephen, by like, this guy has some ideas on,
yeah,
you know, if you just don't spend like a normal American, you don't have to work nearly as much. Like, your money can do all these cool things. And I think a lot of people, the movement is called FIRE. You've heard of the FIRE movement, right?
I have a little bit. I don't know much about it.
And it was real big 10 years ago, and it's still not infrequent that somebody shows up at my virtual doorstep as a financial planner, and their main goal is FIRE. It stands for Financial Independence Retire Early. I want to just stuff it away so that I can get out of this cruddy job that I have to go to every day. And my hot take here is that FIRE is a self-centered and ultimately empty goal. And it's because it ends with you. And like you were just saying, Stephen, kingdom-minded wealth keeps going long after you're gone, and you're not the main character in the story. You're just a point in a river that is a lot. It's going to keep flowing behind you and in front of you. You talked about Proverbs 13:22. It's very clear that inheritance is not just a nice thing, but it's expected of a good steward. If you want to be thought of as a good man, you will leave an inheritance, not to your children, to your children's children. So multiple generations out. You know, I think that this whole movement is built on the idea that once you've got enough for you, whatever that is, it might be for you to live super frugally, it might be for you to luxuriate for all of your days, but whatever that is, once you've got enough for you, you can check out. And I think it's a really shallow finish line. And personally, you know, we're not here to toot our own horns, are we, Stephen? Is that
not primarily? That's not the primary goal, no.
Right, but we are gonna toot a little bit today.
Okay,
because you were just talking about how you could buy a car when you wanted to. I could retire today,
right?
Like, and never have another dollar of earned income come into my home. My house is in a spot where, you know, if we wanted to pay it off tomorrow, we could. We have investment accounts. And actually, the effect of that going, oh, if my goal was just to like pay my grocery bill and my utilities from now until I die, I can do that with the money I've already made. It did not have the effect on me of going, well, I just want to work 10 hours a week and just kind of, why, what's the point? It had the opposite effect, because my goal is not to build a bigger lifestyle. It's actually super fun to think about all the ways we can advance the kind of kingdom of God through the multi-generational family vision now. And so that means there's things in my financial plan. My financial plan looks kind of weird because we've got about the same or less ending assets that are in my name in my financial plan, which isn't to say we know what's going to happen in the future. It's just kind of a, hey, here's a potential path that we are kind of using as a guideline for making decisions. There's about the same assets when I'm 85 as there are now. And mostly because we have pushed so much of that into the future in places like what you were talking about, Stephen, funding things that we'll never experience, but also funding some stuff that's like, for example, we said goals summits have been so good for us as a couple. And what would it look like to not just have a college funding plan, again, kind of that old model of once they're educated, they're not my problem.
Right.
And saying, we have three daughters. What if we wanted to fund a goals summit for all three of them until we die to go on with their husband? We'll just take that off their plate. Not just so that we can give a gift, that's nice, but so that they can take the money that my wife and I are spending on goals summits for each other once a year, and they can use it to push money even further out. And so right. That's where, like, these little things, it's not a humongous amount of money, but these little things, you know, other stuff that we've talked about is we live in a very high cost place. We would like it to be possible, at least for our family, to all live here for the long term. But to make that happen, we probably need to have a plan to help with down payments for houses.
Yes.
Private school tuition is very expensive. And it's also, it's a lot harder for most families to cover than college. Because by the time your kids get to college, most people are in their prime earning years and it's actually doable.
Yeah.
I know it takes a lot of planning, but it's somewhat doable. But it's really hard to afford private school when you're 30 and you're at the early phase maybe of your career earnings. So all of this stuff is stuff that we're like, just by working now, we can check some of this stuff off the list for future generations and give them permission to start thinking about, well, our parents didn't have these things covered for them, but they were able to cover it for us. What could we cover for like the next 10 generations? And it just snowballs. So getting to kind of a FIRE money level for me was super exciting because it meant like I got permission to start thinking about some of this big picture multi-generational stuff. And I wasn't fully focused on, am I going to be able to, you know, buy groceries when I'm no longer working a 9-to-5?
Right. Well, that's great. 9 unconventional truths that your financial advisor won't tell you. I'll just say in conclusion that when you're watching an advertisement or a video, or you look at a brochure that goes, now here's conventional wisdom about finances, we certainly wouldn't tell you not to follow conventional wisdom. I think we're supposed to learn. God tells us to learn and understand these systems of money for our spending, our saving, our giving, for building up wealth for the future. But just know that when you're looking at things from a biblical worldview, you might have an unconventional take on some things that the world would think about twice. And that's what it's like if you're going to follow in an Abrahamic way. So bless you all as you try to pursue these things for your family.